Welcome to this episode of World Harvest Outreach's Wednesday night Bible study.
So welcome, everyone. Thanks for joining us this evening. So this year, of course, we're talking about bridging the gap between heaven and earth. And we've been talking about, issues, social issues, and how we can address them and how we can approach them. Mark has just done a series about justice and how we can apply that in the earth. And even Jocelyn on Sunday talked about how we apply justice to children. And so I wanted to shift gears a little bit tonight and talk about integrity. So we were talking about some words that were important to us at the beginning of the year in a group, and this word integrity just really grabbed a hold of me. And I'm not sure how this is going to come out tonight, to be honest. I have a lot of thoughts, and I feel like the Lord is just showing me a lot of things with regard to integrity, but I feel the weight of it, and so I just want to talk about that a little bit. And I thought it would just be great if we could open up a conversation about what integrity in our lives looks like. Because as I've looked at the last year, and looked at the interactions that we've had with one another, and even on, a larger scale, in our country, how different groups interact with one another. If there was one thing that I could point at as to why there seems to be division and lack of trust and sort of a pulling away or pushing away from one another, I think we could pinpoint it down to the fact that we don't believe in each other's integrity anymore. So I wanted to open it up first and just talk about, we all have this idea of integrity. We all want to believe that we are integrous, if that's a word, right? But I don't know that we spend a whole lot of time thinking about, what does that really mean and how can I walk with integrity in my life? So let's put some things up on the board here and just talk about if you were going to define integrity or you were going to describe someone that walks in integrity, what are the types of things that come to mind? Keep your word. Okay.
Oops.
Well, all right, that's not working. So we'll just popcorn it for a while. Okay. So they keep their word. What else? Consistency. Okay, I like that. Thank you. Oh, there's a whole bunch. That's a good one.
Much better.
Okay, what else? Two for wisdom. What else? Okay, so trustworthy. Great. I would add that one. What other words come to mind? Same all the way through.
That's what you were saying here.
Okay. And that one was really a thing that struck me as well, because I think when we talk about integrity, we think of like our words matching our actions, right? And that's, we see some of these things, like we'll keep our word. I would say like oftentimes I think like that person is reliable, right? They're stable, right? They're almost predictable because they're the same all the way through. And where I want to get tonight a little bit is we think of integrity as our words matching our actions, but it's really deeper than that. Like, I don't think we can separate our integrity from our identity. And especially as believers, like it goes much deeper to like who does the Lord say I am? Who I am I as a son? And how does that get presented to the earth? Right? So I like to think that I have a high level of integrity, but I remember when I first came to know the Lord and he showed me healing, like he showed it to me. And it was one of the first things that I had great revelation about. And I know that he's a healer, and I know that that comes through us oftentimes. And yet there are still times when I see someone that needs healing and I don't go and offer to pray for them. And the thing is, like, they don't know the difference, right? Like, they don't know. But in me, for me to know that I have integrity, like, what I know to be true about myself inside has to match, right? And if you don't have that, it creates hypocrisy. Like, so an opposite of integrity often is hypocrisy, right? And we think of that like, oh, they just said that thing yesterday and that thing today, and that doesn't match up. What a hypocrite, right? And I would say hypocrisy probably includes some level of like intentional deceiving versus just like being incongruent or something, like where you just haven't really thought that through all the way, right? But there's hypocrisy in us as well, especially when we take Holy Spirit into our lives. Like literally, I'm going to read a scripture later that I feel like it will just, it sang over me today. But literally, like Holy Spirit comes in and grabs a hold and we just can't separate, right? And so when Holy Spirit is telling me one thing and I'm telling myself something else and not operating out of that, like I'm causing hypocrisy in myself, and it does not bring life, right? Nobody else knows that, but we know that inside. So as I think about like, how do I walk in integrity? It really has to start with an understanding of, or start and continue with an ongoing understanding of like who I am and how that plays out. You know, and I think it goes to, you know, the work. Like there's a verse in Proverbs 11:3 that says, "The integrity of the upright will guide them, but the crookedness of the treacherous will destroy them." So the integrity of the upright will guide them. And in the Passion, it says, "Integrity will lead you to success and happiness, but treachery will destroy your dreams." I find that interesting that like, treachery destroys our dreams or our vision, right? Like things are not as clear. We lose sight of the of our hope for the future, of our vision, of our dreams. But it's this idea of integrity guiding us. And I thought of when I read that verse, like if I'm going to scale Mount Everest and I hire a guide, like I want that guide to have experience, not just book knowledge. Like I want them to have gone into that situation before and figured it out. I want them to be able to take a sound set of experience and principles and apply it in a potentially unknown situation. Like that's the kind of guide I'm looking for to help me get to the top of Mount Everest, right? I don't want a guide that just has book knowledge. So if integrity is our guide, then we need to actively pursue integrity in the sense of like, what do I, who am I, and what do I believe? And why do I believe those things? And if I believe this or feel strongly about this, but I don't feel so strongly about this. Why is that? Are they different issues or are they the same issues? Like, you know, one that comes up all the time is like, I am pro-life, okay? But am I as triggered about pro-life when we're talking about capital punishment? You know? And so are they the same thing or are they different things? And if I don't do the work to think about, like, what is my guiding principle there? Like, and I don't apply that into these different situations, if there is a moment of opportunity to discuss this, like, I'm not going to have it figured out. So as I'm thinking about integrity being our guide, I think we have to be proactive in thinking about, like, what do I believe in? What do I stand for? And how does that apply to all of the areas of my life? And is it consistent across the board? Okay. I was thinking about some of the people that took SOS this week. And in that SOS session, like, a lot of times you get this tremendous revelation about the Father that you didn't have before. But if you leave it there and you don't allow it to penetrate into the different areas of your life, it's really just head knowledge and heart knowledge, right? Like, it might even be in your heart, but is there going to be an outward manifestation of it? You know, so I'm thinking about the same thing with integrity. Like, if we have something that burns in us that we know to be true and something that we want to stand on and something that we want to come out of us, we have to do the work to think about how does that apply to these situations? Because there's a couple of different ways to test, like, your integrity, I think. And one of them is difficult situations, because it's easy to think, like, I've got a lot of integrity. I walk in integrity, you know, and then we put ourselves into an intense situation and suddenly my integrity is no longer there. Like, I manage people and I believe that all of my employees should be respected and that I should talk to them in a certain way, right? And I should have honor for them. And then there's a deadline and someone forgot to do something and suddenly I'm under the gun and everything about the way I interact with them changes because of the pressure of the situation. And I have to step back and go, like, where was my integrity? You know, and maybe if I had spent some more time thinking about, like, what do I really stand for? And then, of course, we have to put ourselves into those situations sometimes and learn and gain experience. Like, integrity is my integrity is mine. Like, it is my responsibility, right? I own my integrity, but I have to apply it in a world full of people and ideas and difficult situations and gray areas. And that's where it becomes more complicated than just saying, you know, these are the things I stand for. I think the other place, you know, in scripture, we're going to look at this parable a little later. It talks about he who is faithful with little will be faithful with much. And I think that applies to integrity as well. You know, it sort of tests our integrity because we can think about certain situations. Like, for example, I believe I should be a generous person and I'll be generous as soon as I have more, whatever, money, time, whatever, right? Is that a place of integrity? Is that a place of consistency in my life? You know, like, I believe in honoring my relationships and pouring into them, but this guy that I'm talking to on the phone for 15 minutes, this customer service rep that's driving me crazy, like, I can talk to him however I want to because that's just a little thing. Like, that's just a temporary relationship, right? So I am okay telling someone that just cut me off on the road how I feel about that. I'm okay using a different voice or a different level of patience with the guy on the phone that I'm only going to have a 5-minute relationship with. But yeah, I walk in integrity and I love the people in my life. I care about my relationships, you know? And so I think when we look, it's like, you know, the thing is, like, what you do with little, you will do with much. You know, we think that's not such a big deal. Like, I would never lie about that big thing. Like, but this little white lie, that's okay. You know, Like if that person really needed me to pray for them, I would do it. But, you know, there's someone else there. Like we rationalize and make decisions about the things based on how big or how little they are. And I think if we look at this, you know, we have to question, like, where is my integrity in those things? And again, go back to like, what do I stand for? What do I believe in? Who am I? And how am I applying that across the board? And is it the circumstance that determines how I apply that thing? You know, or is it because it's a part of who I am and I'm walking in that in every way, you know? Any thoughts so far? Okay. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I thought about that actually, because, you know, you could walk away from this and go like, man, I don't have any integrity. Like, you know, like this is really condemning, and it's actually like not meant to be that at all. I think it's the opportunity to continue to explore who we are and what that looks like as we manifest ourselves in the earth. So I think there are circumstances where we would operate a little differently, but does that violate our heart position? Like, are we exchanging our integrity for the approval of man? Are we exchanging our integrity for success or for promotion? And in those cases, I would say it's not integrity. You know, if you behave differently because you're sort of like trading for the world's wealth versus like being true to what's in your heart. But I do think there's a place for sure where we can come authentically, but into with discernment, because what I'm thinking about, like, for example, I think of integrity as honesty. Okay. Like if you are integrous, for the most part, we think you're an honest person, right? You keep your word, you're good for your word. Okay. But there's something more to it. Like, are you blatantly honest? Do you just blurt out everything that you can because it's honest? Do you?
What if you're honestly wrong?
Or honest, right. And I don't think integrity means that you necessarily get everything right. In fact, we're going to look at Job, believe it or not, but I don't think it necessarily means that, but we're open, right? Our hearts are open to that. But like, I'm thinking about this verse. Let me find it here. I actually wrote this down. Ephesians 4:29. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for the edification according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear. So let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only words according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear. So integrity is not honesty for the sake of being honest. It's honesty for the sake of giving grace to those who hear. So I think, Mark, to your question about like when in Rome, like my integrity says I should be honest. But in this moment, I read the situation, and that doesn't mean that I need to blurt out everything I know about that situation, right? I think that would be an example. Yeah.
It's like love comes with this.
Yeah.
I think that's really key. Any of these attributes are gifts.
Can you hear this? Okay. So many of the attributes of God are actually intended to work in partnership with each other. So the beauty of your talk, what you're just describing, is the integrity, which is like the purity of that which God created me to be, but then also has a unique application depending upon the environment. Mm-hmm. So one environment needs a fire hose and another environment needs a sprinkler. And to know the difference between the two, I believe, is integrity with discernment. I love that.
Yeah, I think it really does. It's like integrity takes all of these things and sort of elevates them, you know, as our guide. And so, and so here's this, I'm just going to read this verse because I think especially for us as believers, I'm going to read it in the Passion Translation too, but it's just this idea, like we can't live apart from the Lord. And so the Lord's heart, even though his heart is the same, like he operates according to how to bring the most life in the moment. And I think that's part of integrity as well. It's not for the sake of integrity. It's for the sake of bringing life. And there is a component of it. Like I said, it's my integrity, but I have to administer it in the world, like among people and among situations. And so there is that discernment. But listen to Ephesians 3:17 in the Passion. Then by constantly using your faith, the life of Christ will be released deep inside of you, and the resting place of his love will become the very source and root of your life. Then you will be empowered to discover what every holy one experiences, the great magnitude of the astonishing love of Christ in all its dimensions. How deeply intimate and far-reaching is his love. How enduring and inclusive it is. Endless love beyond measurement that transcends our understanding. This extravagant love pours into you until you are filled to overflowing with the fullness of God. And so I read that verse and think like we are inextricably tied to the Lord when we decide to join with him. And so our integrity has to go beyond just like the words I say, matching up with the actions. It literally has to be about the son that I am manifesting itself in partnership with the way the Lord would have that happen in the earth, you know? And that takes thought, you know, because everything is not, issues are not always simple and interactions are not always, you know, this way or that way. And maybe there's a situation that has two ways to get to the right answer, you know? And so the more we are prepared in knowing who we are, like, and think about these things, I'm trying to get across that I think it's more of an active process, or at least an intentional one where we feel the weight of it. And we know, like, we should be as prepared as we can be. And sometimes that's in the way of just like continuing to learn about who we are. And sometimes that's like taking the extra steps to learn more about a situation or to talk with people or to practice. Like we can't do it by ourselves. It doesn't happen in a vacuum. Like I need to practice back to that integrity will be our guide. You know, like if I'm having thoughts, I want to bounce them off of people that I trust that have wisdom so I can fine tune that. And I can do some like inspection of myself and say, wow, that doesn't really match up the way I thought it did. Like I might need to change gears on that and realize I was wrong. Like that's integrity, right? I think it's an openness of our heart, you know? Okay. So let's see here. Okay. I've been reading Job, and it's interesting. It's a really deep and interesting book. But I'll tell you that when I looked at this verse, Proverbs 11:3, and it talked about integrity being our guide, when you look at that word integrity and then look at other places where it appears, you see that in the Old Testament, Job has a lot of references that include integrity, you know. So in fact, there are several places, even the Lord himself says, you know, Job is upright and blameless. Like even after you incited me against him, he maintained his integrity. So I wanted to take a look there. I don't know, does anyone ever spend any time reading in Job? Has anyone seriously ever read it? Like, so I wanted to take a look there because I was like, okay, the Lord called Job integrous, right? And as you go through the book, Like he continues to say that. Like Job says, I will not lose my integrity as long as I live. You know, and at the end of the book, the Lord calls Job right. Okay. So I want to take a look at some of this. You don't need to go in because I'm going to read a lot of scriptures and hopefully sort of give a progression of the book. But, you know, we know there's this exchange at the beginning between the Lord and Satan. And we know that the Lord lifts his hedge of protection around Job, and then bad things start happening to Job. Okay. And let me see here. Let's start. As I think about, you know, Job's integrity as this first series of disasters happened to him. You know, he says in 121, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return to there. The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. So I think, okay, like, you know, Job is integrous because these horrible things happened to him. And now he's saying, like, the Lord gives and the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. So, of course, the Lord calls that integrous. But then that's not the story, right? So as we keep reading through this book of Job, Job continues to respond to the Lord as more and more happens to him. Okay, and I'm just going to read a couple of these things and listen to what Job is saying to the Lord. Okay. 9:7, for he bruises me with a tempest and multiplies my wounds without cause. He will not allow me to get my breath, but saturates me with bitterness. It is all one, therefore I say, he destroys the guiltless and the wicked. If the scourge kills suddenly, he mocks the despair of the innocent. The earth is given into the hand of the wicked. He covers the faces of its judges. If it is not he, then who is it? See, Job was not privy to the interaction between God and Satan, right? He doesn't know that. So he's offering up, like when these things are happening to him, he's saying, like, he's believing that this is the Lord doing these things to him. And so he's taking this to the Lord. 10:3, is it right for you indeed to oppress, to reject the labor of your hands, and to look favorably on the schemes of the wicked? Your hands fashioned and made me altogether, and would you destroy me? Should my head be lifted up, you would hunt me like a lion. And again, you would show your power against me. You renew your witness against me. Hardship after hardship is with me. Would he not let my few days alone? Withdraw from me that I may have a little cheer. So Job is actually saying, like, withdraw from me, right? So God calls him integrous. At the end, he says, Job got it right. And here Job is saying, withdraw from me that I might have a little cheer. His anger has torn me and hunted me down. He has gnashed at me with his teeth. My adversary glared at me. Who is this Almighty that we should serve him? And what would we gain if we prayed to him? By a great force, my garment is distorted. It binds me about the collar of my coat. He has cast me into the mire, and I have become like dust and ashes. I cry out to you for help, but you do not answer me. I stand up and you turn your attention against me. You have become cruel to me. With the might of your hand, you persecute me. Okay, so throughout the book, here is Job starting out with, like, well, the Lord gives and the Lord takes. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And then he moves further and further away from that, okay, taking this to the Lord. Okay, now we're going to look at his friends. Okay. Now, Job had three friends that came after this first disaster, and they were good friends. Like, they came from a long way, and they mourned with him for 7 days. Like, these are good friends, right? But the first thing they say to him as they see this happening is, remember now, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the upright destroyed? According to what I have seen, those who plow iniquity and those who sow trouble harvest it. By the breath of God, they perish, and by the blast of his anger, they come to an end. So Job and his friends believe that all this stuff that's happening is because the Lord is doing it. Okay, they're not privy again to this interaction between God and Satan, right? So from their perspective, this is all the Lord doing it. And at the time, the thought was, if good things are happening to me, it's because the Lord is blessing me because I'm righteous. And if bad things are happening to me, they're happening to me because the Lord is judging me because I'm unrighteous. So his friends come and see Job and these bad things that happen to him. And they say, that doesn't make sense. Like, this is my, we don't really believe Job did anything wrong. This is my interpretation. Like, but this is sort of scary, because if bad things are happening to him and it's not because he did anything, then that might mean that bad things can happen to me too. So I'm going to say to Job, now, whoever perished being innocent, I think that's their thoughts, right? They're trying to justify and rationalize this situation, and they turn on their friend in doing it, okay? They're operating out of the fear of this could happen to me too, even though I think they know deep inside, they know Job's character. They were his good friends, right? Then there's a round two. In fact, Job sort of talks to them in the sixth chapter, and he says, this is like really heartbreaking, for the despairing man, there should be kindness from his friend so that he does not forsake the fear of the Almighty. Even if I did something wrong, shouldn't there be kindness from my friends? Indeed, you have now become such. You see terror and you are afraid. Like, I read that, and Job knows his friends are operating from fear. Like, they have traded, I believe, what was in their heart that they knew to be true about Job to try to justify it and comfort themselves in that moment. Okay? Does that make sense? There's a second round of that. Okay? Let's see here. When they come back around at him after he says, like, look, I'm innocent. I haven't sinned. They say, if iniquity is in your hand, put it far away and do not let wickedness dwell in your tents. Then indeed you could lift up your face without moral defect and you would be steadfast and not fear. But the eyes of the wicked will fail and there will be no escape for them. And their hope is to breathe their last. Another friend says, he swallows riches but will vomit them up. In other words, like when we sin, the benefit of that is only temporary. God will expel them from his belly. He returns what he has attained and cannot swallow it. As to the riches of his trading, he cannot even enjoy them. For he has oppressed and forsaken the poor. He has seized a house which he has not built. What? Like, I think they're literally making up explanations. Did Job do these things? I mean, I don't know. The next, Job 22, 5 through 7, is not your wickedness great and your iniquities without end? For you have taken pledges of your brothers without cause and stripped men naked. To the weary, you have given no water to drink, and from the hungry, you have withheld bread. You have sent widows away empty, and the strength of the orphans has been crushed. Right? So this is, remember at the beginning of the story, the Lord is calling Job the most righteous, upright man that has ever walked the earth. And then disaster befalls him. He didn't have time to not feed the hungry. Like, I don't think that happened. And yet here are his friends, right? But they stood up for the Lord, right? They believed the Lord was just. They would not give in to the possibility that it wasn't Job's fault, right? So throughout the book, what I see is his friends are defending the Lord. Right? Job is saying to the Lord, like, leave me alone, right? But then let's look at what happens in the end of this book. Okay, so the Lord has a talk with Job, which is also interesting. To find that verse here. Because the Lord comes to Job, then, if you're not familiar with this, and he's like, Job, like, what do you really know? And he sort of asks this series of questions. And there's a place he's like, did you create the universe? Like, take a step back from what you think you know about this situation. You know, sort of like a humbling interaction between Job and the Lord. And Job repents. He's like, I had it wrong. I thought about this the wrong way. But then the Lord goes to his friends. And it says, it came about after the Lord had spoken these words to Job, that the Lord said to Eliphaz the Temanite, my wrath is kindled against you and against your two friends, because you have not spoken of me what is right, as my servant Job has. Okay. So throughout this whole book, Job did not really speak of what was right, right? He misinterpreted everything that was happening for like 40 chapters. Okay. Job's friends went through the whole book defending the Lord. Like, if the Lord is doing this to you, it must be because of your sin, right? And in the end, the Lord calls Job right, right? He didn't lose his integrity. So why is that? Like, that word right is K-U-N, kun. Okay. And it means like to be straight, to be firm, to be firmly established, to align with. But it doesn't necessarily mean he's correct. It means he aligned himself to the Lord and to what he knew to be true in his heart. And I think that's what the Lord calls integrity in Job, right? The friends knew that they were making things up about Job. They said the right things. They gave the right answers. But the Lord saw their hearts, right? And he knew they weren't being true to themselves. They were operating out of fear. And the Lord is like, Job is the integrous one. Is that a word, integrous? Okay, just making sure it's not one of those words I made up. Like, he's the integrous one. He's the one that was willing to be open and honest and pour out his heart to me. Like, that's what I'm looking for. And then when I get it wrong, my heart is open so I can be corrected. But here's another really key point. It's in chapter 13 here. Let me see. Whoops, hold on. I think I have that written down. Chapter 13, 3, Job says, but I would speak to the Almighty and I desire to argue with God. Okay. So I think there was a whole lot of wisdom, right, in Job, because he knew where to take his concerns. Like, he knew that there was something unsettled. He wasn't willing to compromise his heart and make something up so it could become comfortable. He had to fight for it, right? He had to get it settled, but he also knew where to do that. I desire to argue with the Lord. Okay, that's where we go. So I think sometimes, like, we even think, like, how do I take a stand for the things, you know, and in what arena do I do that? And how do I express myself? And how do I figure this out? And I think sometimes, like, It's before the Lord, like, that we work these things out. There's wisdom in that. Before we go work it out somewhere where we're not meant to work it out. Does that make sense? And Job knew that. And I think the Lord really appreciated that. And that's why in the end, even though he spent, you know, 40 chapters literally moving to a place of really being angry with the Lord and really saying some things, you know, that were angry towards the Lord. The Lord was like, my servant Job, he got it right, because he kept his heart in a place where I could interact with it, right? And he was true and honest and willing to fight to find out, like, what was really happening here, you know? And so I think that is a really beautiful picture of integrity, okay? All right, any thoughts there? I don't know what time it is, but I have. Oh, we're good.
Can you go back and
say the thing that you said about.
Can you go back and say the thing that you said about the word that meant alignment?
Yeah.
I felt this thing in my spirit go whoop. And then you went on to it too fast. Like I wanted to press
pause. Okay, sorry. Yeah, I'm pulling this up here. Okay. So it's the Hebrew word kun, K-U-N. Okay. And it's right. So you have, my wrath is kindled against you, Job's friends, because you have not spoken of me what is right, as my servant Job has. 42:7. My servant Job spoke of me what is right, right? And so we look at this whole book and he didn't really, you know? And so
it was still even his heart was still aligned with God's, even though
I think it was.
He was in the middle of the mess of his details.
I think that's what. He at least stayed open, even though he was saying, like, would you depart from me? He's saying, like, I want to argue with the Lord about this, right? I want my heart to stay open to him. And I have to remain, like, rooted in, like, what my heart is telling me too, right? So I think it's like the Lord is looking for us to be aligned, not only with him, but to be aligned with what we're truly feeling. You know, so like integrity doesn't come because someone tells us something and it doesn't quite sit right with us, but we sort of just go, okay, well, I guess that's true. Fake so it. Fake it, right? So because at some point that's going to not work out real well because it's not, but Job was willing to fight for it. Like he wasn't, his friends really pushed him. I mean, the things his friends said to him, there was a lot of pressure for him to go, you're right, I sinned. And he didn't because he knew he hadn't. He remained true to what he knew in his heart and he remained open to the Lord, I think. And so I think that's the right. I think that's the aligned or the firmly established and rooted. You know, like if we don't leave, and there's so many scriptures about that, you know, like if we can, it's, you know, it's the one I used the other day about like when our eye is clear, and that word clear is like two roots that talk about like, Christ and being plated and braided together. So like when we are firmly rooted with the Lord, our eye is clear and passion says revelation light floods in. Like that's where we see the most clearly if we're willing to not compromise and trade like the easy way, you know, trade for the easy way. Like, okay, I got it. Like it's good, you know. And then we compromise ourselves and then we don't build the integrity that we need to have.
Sort of like being honest with yourself.
Yeah.
The fact that you're mad about something, even if it's something that the Lord's bringing.
I think that's right. Like, it's right. Yeah.
Sitting in that.
I think he wants that. Like he wants us to pursue him. And I mean, to, you know, keep our hearts open to learn from him, obviously, not just to fight with him, but right? Yeah. Right? Okay. Let's see here. Any other thoughts here? Okay. The other one I wanted to look at was Luke 16. So let's jump there. The unrighteous steward, or in Passion, it's called the dishonest manager. This is another one. Is this a parable that people have studied a lot? Because like in 15, we have like 15 ends with the prodigal son, which everyone knows. And then right after this is the rich man and Lazarus. And this parable is sort of tucked right in the middle of those. And I really hadn't spent any time ever, I think, looking at this one for some reason. I don't know. But it's where we find that verse, like he who is faithful with little will be faithful with much. Okay. So I'm going to read, let's see here. Let's just read through this first. Whoops. Okay. The unrighteous steward, Luke 16. Now he was also saying to the disciples, there was a rich man who had a manager, and this manager was reported to him as squandering his possessions. And he called him and said to him, what is this I hear about you? Give an accounting of your management, for you can no longer be manager. So basically, there's this very wealthy man who has someone who manages his accounts for him, and he finds out he's being unfaithful with those accounts, right? And he says, come in here, like give account for everything. You can no longer work here. So I think he doesn't fire him on the spot and kick him out, but he says, like, you need to get things cleaned up and turn them over to me because you're done here, okay? The manager said to himself, what shall I do since my master is taking the management away from me? I am not strong enough to dig, and I am ashamed to beg. So the manager goes into a panic and is like, what can I do? Because I think what this guy has been doing is going around town collecting debts, like, you know, the money that was owed to this very wealthy man. So he probably wasn't an incredibly popular person among the townspeople. And so he's thinking, I've lost this job. Like, what can I do now? Because I can't dig. Like, maybe labor was not his thing, or he was older. I don't know. And like, I can't beg. So what am I going to do? I know what I shall do so that when I am removed from the management, people will welcome me into their homes. So he devises a plan so that he has something to look forward to in his future. And he summoned each one of his master's debtors. And he began saying to the first, how much do you owe my master? And he said, 100 measures of oil. And I've seen that as like, I think in Passion it says $20,000. So it's a significant sum of money. I saw somewhere else, I think it said like 3 years' wages. And he said to him, take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. So you owe 100, hurry up, sit down and write 50. Okay. Then he said to another, and how much do you owe? And he said, 100 measures of wheat, which I think is translated here into like $200,000. So these are significant debts, right? And the manager says to him, take your bill and write 80. So basically he goes to all the people that owe the manager money. And he says, you owe 100, just pay me 50. You owe 80, just pay me 30, whatever, right? He gets all these debts settled up while he's still able to do that.
First debt, it's all
And then he goes back to his master, right? And it says, and his master praised the unrighteous manager because he had acted shrewdly. Okay, now here's the sentence. For the sons of this age are more shrewd in relation to their own kind than the sons of light. And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by means of the wealth of unrighteousness, so that when it fails, they will receive you into the eternal dwellings. He who is faithful in a very little thing is faithful also in much. And he who is unrighteous in a very little thing is also unrighteous in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the use of unrighteous wealth, who will entrust the true riches to you? And if you have not been faithful in the use of that which is another's, who will give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. Okay, so let's see here. I wanted to look back at this one verse. I think it's verse 9 in the Passion. And it says, Jesus continued, remember this, the sons of darkness are more shrewd than the sons of light, in their interactions with others. It is important that you use the wealth of this world to demonstrate your friendship with God by winning friends and blessing others. Then when this world fails and falls apart, your generosity will provide you with an eternal reward. Okay, so what does it have to do with integrity? Because it seems sort of interesting that the story is about this master and his manager, and Jesus tells us that the master praises this manager who had been deceiving him, right? And then went out and settled his debts in a way that really wasn't appropriate, right? Okay. But I think what Jesus is saying here is this. This is what it said to me. Our integrity, okay, has everything to do with what we believe about ourselves and what our hope is for the future, okay? So this guy, this manager, gets really frightened because he's being fired, and he doesn't see a future for himself, right? He's not a believer in this story, right? He doesn't have the hope of Jesus. He doesn't have the hope of eternal life, that sort of thing. But he puts a lot of effort into coming up with a plan to make way for his future, like to pour into his future. Okay. And I think Jesus is saying here, like, the sons of this, it says, the sons of this age act more shrewdly, work more hard in relation to their own kind, in relation to what they know, than you do with what you know. Right. So, I'm sorry, I'm not pulling this together real well, but I think the idea here is, like, if we know who we are and we know our future, like, what are we doing about that? What is pouring out of us? Because this guy was pouring into a world that was going to end. Like, he doesn't have a hope, and yet he's willing to put a tremendous effort into making the best of that, like, to giving his all to that, right? To make a way for that. Like, so what are we doing with our resources? And the, you know, he's saying here, like, if you are faithful with little, can you be faithful with the things of this world, knowing what you know? Like, and then the wealth of the spiritual things will be given to you. He who is faithful with little will be faithful with much. So I think this is a call to sort of shore up how we are operating, knowing what we know. Like, what am I doing with the resource I have? What am I doing with my money here on earth? Does that reflect what I know about the future? Okay. Does that match up with what I know? What am I doing with the fact that I'm a son? Am I stepping up and stepping out because of what I know? Like, the sons of this age are doing it, and they don't even have anything to look forward to. They don't even have the resource of heaven, and yet they're considering, like, we do a lot of that. We plan up for our future, you know, like we use the resources of this world. And I think Jesus is saying, like, you've got so much more at your disposal. Use it. You know, that's part of who you are. That's part of what I am in you. And so if I'm going to call up your identity, like, and again, with integrity being like same all the way through, if this is part of my identity, then I sure as heck better be pouring into it with at least the same effort of someone who's pouring into a world that's going to end. Right? Does that make sense? It took a little while to get there maybe, but...
I need to ask an embarrassing question. All right, so I've tried to reread this a couple times, and I can't tell if the money he's collecting, where he's kind of cutting his debts in half, is it implied in the text that he is keeping that money for himself?
Yep. So here's what I think. There could be a couple of things, right?
Yeah.
What I see is he's making a future for himself. Like, and I'm not talking about earning our way into heaven, by the way. I'm just talking about operating away in a way that matches what our hope and future is, right? So like I'm not, but I think what he's doing is he is going to these people while he still sort of has the authority to do it and settling debts for less than what they owe, so that when he has to leave this job, he's going to be welcomed with open arms. I think he gives the money back to the manager.
So he's winning. So he's winning goodwill to the
goodwill.
Debtors.
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah. Now, I guess there's the possibility, because it doesn't say that he was fired.
I'm glad I asked that question, because that was
but
really.
There is the possibility that he's also like this manager who had all this money, or the master. Like, he could be very well received by the townspeople too, right? Because suddenly you owe me $200,000, just give me 80. So when it says that he was impressed with the manager, maybe he gave him his job back, you know? Yeah. But either way, it was a pretty grand scheme. Like, he put a lot of effort into establishing or pouring into his future, right? Like, to make sure there was goodwill to be received, if that was the case, or make a way, right?
Your jubilee was coming up. So, yeah.
So yeah. There you go. So, but it does, like, it just makes me think, like, you know, what do we trade? You know, he sort of traded his integrity for this worldly wealth because he was mismanaging the funds, right? Like, what do we trade our integrity for? Like I talked earlier about worldly wealth. You know, do we trade our integrity of who we know we really are because we don't want to be embarrassed in front of our fellow man? You know, do we trade our integrity for wealth? You know, I'm willing to overlook these things that are happening here, even though I disagree with them, because I know there's a big paycheck in it for me at the end. Or do we trade our integrity for promotion, for success, for whatever, for friendship, for popularity? You know, what are the things? Because this manager obviously was willing to trade his reputation to make some money somehow off of his master, right? So he's trading. And Jesus is saying very clearly here, like, you know, this is the world that's passing away. Like, don't trade your integrity for that. Use the stuff here to pour into what you know to be, you know, the future hope that you have. But don't trade away your integrity for these worldly riches, because they're going to fade, you know. Oops. I don't know what time it is, but I think we might sort of wrap up there with, oh, one other thought I had about that too, is as I was thinking about, like, it's, you know, that the Proverbs 11:3 talked about, integrity will be our guide, and like treachery will destroy our dreams. And how the more we walk in integrity, like the more we see clearly, but then the reverse of that is like the more we have a vision for like our purpose for walking, the more the easier it is to walk in integrity. Like some of these decisions that are very difficult become easier when we know the big picture. I think it's why, you know, like I'm thinking of like Philippians 4, I have written down here, where Paul is saying, I'm not telling you this because I'm in need, for I have learned to be satisfied in any circumstance. I know what it means to lack, and I know what it means to experience overwhelming abundance. I'm trained in the secret of overcoming all things, whether in fullness or in hunger, and I find that the strength of Christ's explosive power infuses me to conquer every difficulty. I think Paul is saying, like, his circumstances are not persuading him to be someone different than who he is. Because he has Christ in him, like, he can operate in a contented way, being true to himself, regardless of the circumstances, you know? And I think of like Hebrews 12, even, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus. It's a lot easier to walk with a clear picture, like fixed, like when we have our eyes fixed on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross. So like, that's the ultimate, like, you know, Jesus had his eyes set on the joy set before him and was able to endure the cross. Like, and I think, you know, what is it that will help, that will allow me to sort of shift from who I am because I don't want to endure this thing, you know? And so I think the last thought I'll leave with is the more we have our eyes fixed on the Lord and see that hope, like see his hope, the more this becomes, it doesn't become such a struggle, it becomes a little easier to run the race set before us with integrity, because for that, I'm not willing to trade for this lesser thing, for the approval of man, for wealth, for, you know, all of those things we talked about, because this is where my eyes are fixed and there's nothing that can contend for that, you know? Okay, good. So any thoughts here? Questions, comments?
So what I really like about it is, if you think about it, eventually when you lose your integrity as a Christian, like eventually you start presenting a wrong concept of God's, of the Lord's integrity. Like, because we are his, we represent him here. And I feel that that's what it has been happening a lot lately through the years, that just because we decide to, I don't know, take a stance for something that you should not do it in a certain way. You said something that you should have said it in that way, but you kept saying, this is the Lord, this is the Lord. So you are losing your integrity to look good in front of this group of people. Mm-hmm. And eventually people are going to say, oh, that's what God thinks about these or people then.
Right.
And so I really think it's really, really important how it goes with everything that we have been talking so far. On Sundays and here as well on Wednesdays, that we really need to coon ourselves with the Lord.
Yes.
That we really need to align ourselves. It is more than just look good. It is more about what we think. It is more than that. It is like, you know, Mark says it all the time, like, how do you see this, Lord? How can I see this like you do? How can I see them like you do? How can even I do this the way that you will do it, or the way that you have been doing it? So I really love all this. It is just crazy how everything, you know, just goes wrapping up one after another. Just, you know, it's just everything is matching, just at least in my eyes, perfectly, I will say.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's one of the things, like, I've heard that so many times, like, you say this, you know, but then you tell me you're a Christian, you know, like that sort of thing, right? You claim to be a Christian, and yet I see this, and that's really a cry for like, something isn't matching up, because what I know about this isn't matching up with this. And some of that sometimes can be because people are wounded, you know, they've been hurt. They, you know, they don't have an understanding and they're not ready to come and say like, show me your heart. And so sometimes that sort of thing can be put out there, I think, you know, as a deflection, because they're not ready to dive deeper into whatever that thing is with you because they've been wounded. But sometimes there's a lot of truth in that, you know, like it stings sometimes when people say that, like, you said you were all about love and I'm not seeing love in this. Right. And so that's, you're right. Like integrity, I think in the beginning I was saying, like, for ourselves, if we don't operate with integrity, like there's going to be a lot of conflict going on internally because we are tied to the Lord. Like he is with us, and it's going to cause us to not walk in peace, you know? And so we have to make sure, like for our own selves, we're walking fully in the most authentic way we can. But then for other people, what they receive is someone who isn't trustworthy, who isn't reliable, who I can't count on. And they throw everything out for that one thing sometimes, right? Like, I think that's a thing too. Like, well, I saw your lack of integrity here. This is very hypocritical. So I'm throwing out any type of interaction with you because I can't trust you at all. And the thing is, like, we want to have voice, right? Like that's why we get like have thoughts about, you know, whether it's an issue or a person or how we want to like bring heaven, you know, and allow people to experience the Lord through us. Like the whole point is so that people experience the Lord through us. Right. So yeah, I agree. It's for us. It's also for our ability to interact. And the more we do it, the bigger platform we have, I think, you know, like, you know, I think sometimes we know what the Lord says about something and we feel so strongly about it. And we want to bring that thing because we know it's the Lord's heart. And it sort of goes back to like the timing of it. Like, Abraham and Sarah, like, were promised a son, you know, and the Lord said, I'll bring the son. And then they decided to change the timing and take that into their own hands in a way, you know? And I think we do that sometimes with issues, like we know the Lord's heart and then we don't like pursue it through and, you know, when in Rome, like figure out the best way to share it, or we don't take it before the Lord and really figure out his heart and how he wants us to share it. Yeah, we might know what his heart is on the thing, but how does he want us to express it? And then it's received wrong. Yeah, I agree. Anyone else? All right. So thank you all for joining. I'm just going to pray like, Lord, the weight of this issue has been really heavy on my heart. I'm just going to pray for all of us that we long to walk in the fullness of who you created us to be. And we long to walk with integrity that who we are and who you are in us would just be so deep and so foundational that everything we know to be true on the inside would be manifested not only in our thoughts, but in our actions, in the way we walk, in the way we use our resource, that we would be consistently yours, whether we're by ourselves or whether we're in a room full of people. Thank you that you always offer wisdom. Thank you that your heart never leaves us. Lord, help us to walk this way that what people would experience of us is you. All right, in Jesus' name, amen. Mm-hmm. It is so good. Awesome. Like it's so good. I got like, I know, it's like almost, yeah, that hurt a little bit, but it's getting there. If I'm going to be honest, yeah. No, it's really good. Thank you.